Hey everybody, this is another vlog for the 22nd of August 2019. This is Paul Flynn of Megiddo Radio. I wish the topic I'm going to be covering here really, really quickly, I could dedicate an entire Megiddo Radio to, but the last Megiddo Radio program for a few weeks at least was last Tuesday, and I'm going to try and get through this as quickly as possible. Yeah, again, I would have spent an entire program on this, but this is in regards to same-sex attraction, the whole revoice idea, and what's effectively become a middle road between the whole out-and-out gay Christianity, which says the Bible is okay with homosexuality, etc., and so on, and all of the deviations and all of the rejection of God's created order, which is described in the LGBT umbrella, plus anything else, anything, it's just rejection of the creation order, right? And embracing of any unnatural, vile affections, as the Bible calls it in Romans chapter 1. That out and out, Matthew Vines' view, and the biblical view on the other side. Then there's the kind of the middle road, unbiblical road, of revoice, and my brain is gone. Nate Collins's view, which, and a lot of the others, which, well, you know what, we all struggle with desires, and this is just my struggle, we all have different things we struggle with, so therefore, well, this is just another struggle. And it's been downgraded, and not only that, it's been treated like in the same way homosexual struggles, or struggling with being attracted to people of the opposite sex, all, when it's not the same thing at all. There was a controversy that I was going to ignore it, and then, okay, there was a lot of people commenting on it, and I was like, how serious is it? I was shared by Phil Johnson. And I saw one or two people, including a theologian, who I would have had some time for, and I was quite surprised at his opposition to Phil Johnson's article. And I was thinking, okay, Phil Johnson shared this post that I'm going to be talking about from the Gospel Coalition Australia. This is not going to be talking about the how bad the Gospel Coalition is, or good it is, or whatever. I don't know. I don't keep up with it. I know a lot of people have massive issues with the Gospel Coalition, but be that as it may, this is the Australian edition of it, and the title of the article, a lot of people know about it already, Ed Shaw on the Church and Same-Sex Attracted People. And one of the comments, which I'm going to call it sloppy, on what Christ grappled with. Okay, we're going to look at that in a second, but this is kind of where this is going. This is not in a vacuum. I have not had the time to go through Sam Albury's views. I know in the past, for those, he has been misrepresented on various blogs on the internet. I've seen it myself. I've seen, but I don't know if his own position, I've not spent enough time going through Sam Albury's stuff. I haven't been really impressed by it, if I'm being honest, but I haven't gone through it enough to say he is in this camp. I know he's part of Living Out. I'm just not commenting on that, and I would urge everybody who's either engaging in debate or whatever else, be extremely cautious in how you comment on this, because this thing is going to split churches and denominations, because we want to be so PC. We need to be careful, and we need to maintain that sinful, vile affections of their own selves are sinful. That's what's being challenged at the moment. And the downgrade of homosexual desires and homosexuality within the church, and this is what's at stake here, and this is why it's such an important thing. Now, Ed Shaw, who's part of Living Out with Sam Albury and Sean Doherty, and he's speaking soon in Australia. I don't know anything about him. I don't get this whole thing. I don't get the whole premise. just say they're right and there's people within the church who struggle with various things or whatever, the best thing you could do is, if you do struggle badly with various different lusts or whatever else they are, that should be private counseling. And if this dominates your life, you shouldn't be in ministry. You shouldn't be in ministry. Oh, we all struggle with it. Yes, but here's the thing. If your thought life is so dominated by something that is contrary to nature, you shouldn't be in ministry. I'm not saying that you say, oh, you're not saying that I'm not a Christian. I don't know where that line is, okay? But I'm saying this. Christian maturity indicate that there's certain requirements, like 1 Timothy chapter 3, of what a bishop is, bishop or an elder or whatever. So there's certain requirements, and if your thought life is filthy, should you be in ministry? If you're lusting after people of the same sex, that is inherently disordered, and you shouldn't be in ministry. This is, you don't qualify as someone who fits the qualifications for 1 Timothy chapter 3. The maturity level required for 1 Timothy chapter 3 or other parts of the scriptures that talks about the qualifications for an elder. Anyway, so it says, with sharing the struggles of same-sex attracted church leaders, I'd say there shouldn't be, because of the nature. Could you imagine if somebody said, well, I'm sexually attracted towards children. Well, that's disordered as well. And could you imagine if they got a bunch of people in ministry together that said, we're going to talk about how we're church leaders are sexually attracted towards children. How long would you think that would work? And you say, well, that's ridiculous to equate the two of them. They're both contrary to nature. They're both disgusting, vile, and sinful. And what else should we be able to talk about? You know, it gets into absurdity after a while if you took this logic to its conclusion. Anyway, so, and then also in the interview, it says this, this is Ed Shaw. Again, I wish I had more time to respond to this, but it said, he says, well, with both pastoral ministry living out, I was dragging, kicking, and screaming into them. My grandfather and father were both vicars. And the very last thing I was going to do was work for a church. And the very last thing I was going to do was talk to people about my sexuality. And this is just very much, this is my sexuality, can't change it. It's no longer my sinful, just call it what the Bible says, my vile affections. I don't want to talk about my vile affections. And these are vile things. So it's treated like it's just part of somebody's DNA and you can't change it. And that's been the approach of Nate Collins and the same-sex attracted whole movement, which is a halfway house. It's a halfway house between biblical Christianity and where Matthew Vines is. And it won't stay in a halfway house. It is a road to gay Christianity. There's just no way it can survive past a very, very short period of time. It won't. So it's interesting as well. Talks about in the article, in the interview, it's like, do you find your efforts result in some hostility? Sadly, the people who are offended are other Christians. And then usually in the United States, who think we are liberal. So, okay, let's go down, because I really want to get to this really quickly. Then it also talks about helping people to see how they can become biblically inclusive of sexual minorities. And again, you can make exactly the same argument with somebody who's, you could become like Salon, publishing articles from pedophiles who say, well, you know what, I'm attracted towards children. This actually happens, by the way. I'm not just making up examples. But some pedophile who writes articles for Salon magazine and says, well, you know what, as long as I don't act it out, oh, well, you know, slippery slope argument. It's going that direction. Well, this is not what he's saying. You have to think about it nuanced. Yeah, death by a thousand nuances and you say nothing. This is vile affections that are being... Oh, you're so brave to talk about your perversions. If somebody is a Christian and is struggling with various things, there's levels of... There are things that can definitely disqualify you from ministry. And again, this is not talking about whether somebody's a Christian or not. How, by the way, though, if you were still a homosexual, if you were still those things, if your thought life and is ruled by those things, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 to 11 is very, very clear. Such were some of you, but you were washed. I mean, where do the actions come from but out of the heart? If you're born again, you're regenerated by the Spirit of God. You're a new creature. It doesn't mean that you won't struggle from time to time, but you're not dominated, and that is not what defines you. And then at the end is where the main controversy comes. So again, apologies if I seem to be going through this really, really quickly, but sadly, that is all the time I really have. I was even tempted to do a live program again tomorrow, but I just simply don't have the time. The Hebrew course is starting next week, and I need to try and get as much Hebrew in my head as possible before that starts. I appreciate your prayers in that. Now, this is where the trouble arose. Well, the main trouble arose. The other stuff has been said before in various different contexts. I'm wanting the young people who come to this event to know that Jesus is... Ed Shaw. To know that Jesus is the one who can fully trust with their sexualities, identities, and gender, because he... And it's interesting, too. It's not just, oh, you might be attracted. It's also, like, identity and gender. It's all the LGBT. You know, this is, again, just if you don't want to see this... Because he is both their creator God, yeah, and there's a natural order because he's the creator God, and a human being. Sorry, I read this and I'm getting angry just reading this. And anybody, if you love the Lord, you're going to hate sin. And there's something wrong if we're not getting angry when we read things that blaspheme the Lord. The best thing you can say about... I'll just read it first and then I'll comment. Because he's both the creator God and human being who knows what it is like to struggle with a sexuality, identity, and gender. Now, the best thing you can say here, it's sloppy. Just sloppy. Shouldn't have been worded that way. You know what? Shouldn't have said that. Because here's the thing, right? And I say this reverently, for the sake of illustration, and it breaks my heart even to say it out loud. Can you say that Jesus struggled with sodomy? Was having thoughts of sodomy, of things contrary to nature, things that were inherently sinful? No. And it's utterly blasphemous to say that. Utterly, utterly blasphemous. Do not ever move this line. You understand me? You know what? You're going to see a lot of people flinch on this, and I've seen a lot of people flinch already, and it shocked me. Do not. This is a hill to die on. Not everything in church life is a hill to die on. This is. At the end of the article, it says, you know, because they knew there was going to be controversy and all this kind of stuff. So again, it says, who knows, and just talk about Jesus, who knows what it's like to grapple with asexuality, identity, and gender. And then the Gospel Coalition Australia reference to says this at the end of it. We urge our readers to consider the meaning of Hebrews 2:18. Let's go there. Hebrews 2:18 says the following: "For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted." So, right. And then 4:15, Hebrews 4:15. "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but has been all points tempted as we are, yet without sin." Now, we have to think about, because a lot of people don't seem to understand, it's like, yet without sin, yet without sin. So immediately, that gets rid of vile affections. Before we think about, well, how did he struggle? Yet without sin. So any of the vile affections that's referred to in Romans chapter 1 are excluded. He cannot have had those kind of vile affections because he would have sinned if that was the case. Okay? But how did Jesus struggle? If you go to how was he tempted in all points as we are, give you one example of the difference between natural and unnatural. So when Satan tempted Jesus, how did he tempt him? He says, "For if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread." Command these stones to become bread. I want to just give you a few examples of how Jesus is tempted. He was hungry. He was hungry. And is hunger a natural desire? Yeah. But obviously, if you eat too much and you make an idol about it, but inherently, hunger is not sinful unless you take it too far. Command these stones to be made bread. So food, hunger, was the first way Satan tempted. It is written, man shall not live by bread alone. The next, then the devil took him up into the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you. And in their hands they shall bear you up, and lest you dash your foot against a stone." And Jesus said to him, "It is written, you shall not tempt the Lord your God." Jesus is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. There's an element of truth in what the devil is saying. Obviously, he's distorted and all that. But he's given him, how would I put it? Best way is like, Jesus said to him, it's written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. Again, the devil took him up to see the high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these I will give to you if you fall down and worship me. And Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. And the devil left him. Behold, the angels came and ministered to him. So he was tempted by the devil. How is he tempted? In a way that's natural? Well, look at it like this. Jesus is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. The angels are to minister to him. That's a natural desire, right? But yet without sin, he didn't give in to that temptation. But that's a natural desire because he rules over everything, okay? But it wasn't a time to demonstrate his glory, and not in the sinful way that the Satan put forth. Also, he says, the devil says, I will give you all the kingdoms if you worship me. What's the temptation there? The temptation is not to worship the devil. The temptation is, he owns everything. He owns the kingdoms. Satan's really showing him everything that's his anyway. But he humbled himself. So the temptation is, because he's glorious, because he's God, he created everything, it belongs to him, that's a temptation. But He did not sin. He submitted to his father. The temptation, there's the way of the cross and there's the easy way. Devil tempted him through what? Well, here's the easy way. You don't have to go the way of the cross, because he didn't owe us anything. Inherently, it's not sinful for him, for Jesus to go mine, but not at that moment in time. What other ways was Jesus tempted? He was thirsty. He was tired. But did he ever have vile affections? No, because they're inherently sinful. They're inherently sinful. Did Jesus ever have a sinful thought? No. And this absolute nonsense in the article, even after the controversy broke, and at best you can say, it's utterly sloppy. Sloppy, and there's at least a general direction that they're going with Living Out and all these other kind of groups, the Revoice and whatnot. So it says this is from the article from the Gospel Coalition Australia. Every one of these statements is important, not just the last. The Bible does not tell us what particular temptations Jesus may have experienced in these areas. Are you saying that he struggled? Are you saying he had desires for sin? And he grappled with sin, that he was enticed by sin? No, he couldn't be. He couldn't have been. He was sinless, perfect. But how did he struggle? In his humanity, tiredness, hunger, all. And this follows the pattern of Matthew chapter 4. I just give you one example there. Satan, give him all. It belongs to him anyway. These are natural desires. And there's a massive difference, right, between a man being attracted to a woman is not inherently sinful. It's natural. We've been created that way. However, obviously, if somebody lusts and thinks about somebody in a sexual way and all that, but if you're attracted to somebody, like when I remember the first day, I saw my wife, I was attracted to her. Is that inherently sinful? No, of course not. Now, if I was thinking her in an inappropriate way, in a sexual way outside of marriage, that would be sinful and wrong. If I was ever attracted to someone of the same sex, or if I was ever attracted to, and this is mentioned in the Bible too, by the way, an animal, is that sinful? Yes, of course. So this is the direction it's going, the dangerous direction it's going. And let us pray against it, and let's do not, ministers of the God, if you're listening to this, I beg of you, I implore you, dig into the scriptures, think about these things. And don't just kind of go, well, you know, this is going at incredible pace. And I tell you, if we're not, look how much the church has changed in the last 5 years, last 10 years in regards to LGBT issues. This is, you know, everybody looks through our church history and looks at the time of the Athanasian Creed, and say, oh, if I was around that time, you know, they think in their heads, if I would have stood for the Trinity. This is the crisis in the church of our time. It's not even necessarily about homosexuality. It's a sin and everything else. It's about biblical authority. It is about biblical authority at the end of the day. And unnatural desires are inherently sinful. However, there are things like natural desires, like hunger, thirst, tiredness, all this kind of stuff. Okay, we're tempted in that sense. Jesus never sinned. Jesus never had a vile affection. It's been Paul Flynn. Hopefully this has been a blessing to you. Any questions, McGinnifilms@gmail.com. Probably talk to you in a few weeks.